A class by His Holiness Devamrita Swami on Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Leela Chapter 4, Text 131, recorded on the 20th of September 2015 in Hungary.
We are going to try to approach the most sacred and auspicious subject matter of Srimati Radharani. We'll try to do it from several angles. First, let us chant this verse from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Leela, Chapter 4, Text 131. Vibhor api kalayan sada bevridim gurur api gauravacharyaya vinha mahur upachitta Vakramapi Shuddho Jayati Muradvishi Radhika Nuraga. Translation. All glories to Radha's love for Krishna, the enemy of the demon Mura. Although it is all-pervading, it tends to increase at every moment. Although it is important, it is devoid of pride. And although it is pure, it is always beset with duplicity. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada points out that this is a verse in Rupa Goswami's Dhanakeli Kaumudi. This verse beautifully points out what seem to be paradoxes and contradictions. The love of Srimati Radharani is all-pervading, it's everywhere, yet it's still increasing. Although it's important, there's no pride attached to this importance. And it's completely pure, yet there's so much duplicity going on. How can all this be reconciled? On the material platform, it's impossible. But what is this material world anyway? We're so attached to it. We have such big hopes for the material world. We don't expect everything of our material plans and ambitions to work out, but a good portion. We are the ones, as conditioned souls, who have attached a false sense of importance to the material world. And automatically, by doing that, we become disqualified to understand what is real love, what is the spiritual world, what is Radha and Krishna. So we're paying a price for our useless activities in material existence. As Narottam Das Thakur points out, we're willfully drinking poison. The poison is not simply the miseries of material life. Some of you may say, I can tolerate the struggle of material existence. I can ride through the bad times. But the real poison that we are drinking is not so much the suffering from material existence, but it's the inability to understand Radha and Krishna's pastimes. Therefore, when we hear verses as Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is quoting, it seems to be, to mundane senses, like word jugglery. We've forgotten our experience of what is a pure relationship, what is pure love. This is the poison that we're willfully drinking. In talking about Srimati Radharani and Radhashtami, we should understand our total lack to understand what is real happiness. I'll give you some quick information that I explain often in approaching this theme. In material existence, academics for the past 20 years have constructed a new science called happiness science. Suddenly, it's dawned upon human beings that They don't know what is happiness. They need the academics to help them. You see, they explained that 20 years ago, it was forbidden to study happiness because such a topic was considered subjective. Although so many scholars were studying depression, But somehow or other, they had a problem with studying happiness. So now, in the past 20 years, the happiness science has become recognized as bona fide. Such definitions, material definitions of happiness, have nothing to do with what is described in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. We can go back a little further, go back a few hundred years, and you may know the famous German philosopher Nietzsche. You might say he came up with a very Germanic definition of happiness. He says, happiness is when your power is expanding. And when you feel that obstacles in your way are being overcome. It's a complete materialistic definition. Of course, Krishna describes it better in Bhagavad Gita. Ishvaroham bhogi siddham balavam sukhi. I'm the controller. I'm the enjoyer. I'm perfect, powerful, and happy. So just try with whatever little bit of material consciousness that remains, try to visualize that definition, happiness, to feel your power and influence expanding through time and space. And remember what it's like to feel the material delight when obstacles in your path are overcome. What are the current material definitions of happiness? Happiness is a set of positive emotions about yourself. And it's also the feeling that your life is basically good. So you may say, what's wrong with all that? I mean, is bhakti against that? What should I say? Should I tell the truth? On Radhasthami especially, we have to speak the truth about happiness. Such selfish notions of happiness have nothing to do with reality. We'll discuss more about that later. Another material definition of happiness approaches from a different angle. Your happiness is 50% genetic. There's not much you can do about that. And your happiness is 10% situational. That means that circumstances such as where you live, who you're married to, your workplace, you can't change your genetics. And you can't change generally your situation without a lot of endeavor. You can do it, but it's hard. The last 40% is up to you. How you cope with your genetic disposition and your current situations. So those are the prime main speculations on what is happiness. I might point out that according to scholars who study happiness as a global phenomenon, you know those guys in Calcutta, in India, who they're like human transport systems. They pull loads walking through the streets. Either people are on the back or there's some kind of cargo and they... human labor. You've seen them in Calcutta? In English, they're called coolies. You also? Yes. So you would think nothing could be more unfortunate than that kind of job. But happiness scientists have gauged that such coolies on the street of Calcutta are as happy as the average American. I know Hungary's different. To dare to approach the subject of real happiness, what goes on in the topmost portion of the spiritual world, requires humility to admit we don't know what real happiness is. The beginning of real human progress is when you admit, I don't know what is real happiness. Once the core of your existence empties out of artificial happiness, your ideas of artificial happiness, then you can begin to approach the realities of the spiritual world. You'd be surprised how difficult it is for most persons to admit that they don't know what is happiness. This is like admitting defeat. It's like saying that you're a failure. Sometimes people do admit that. the recently internationally famous Hollywood movie star, comedian, commits suicide. He was so powerful with his comedy that when he would walk off the stage, the whole arena would come to his feet, giving him a standing ovation. As he was walking off the stage, he once said to a cohort, "Don't you see what is the contradiction? I know how to make everyone happy, but I myself don't know what happiness is." So in spite of all his international acclaim, his wealth, his fame, he ended his life by hanging himself from a belt in his own bedroom. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna begins to work on our faulty conceptions. Narupam asyam satopalabhyate nanto nacharya natyasampratishta. You're living in a world that is a perverted reflection of someplace else. What is real, you actually can't see. Therefore, Krishna urges you to chop down the false tree of material existence. But by your chopping down the false tree of material existence, are you left with nothing? This is, at this point, to go in more depth, Srimad Bhagavatam takes over. To describe what is the reality that pervertedly reflects as this material world. And then, what we call the postgraduate study to Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, presents the perfection of loving exchanges in the perfect world. Let us hear another verse by Srila Rupa Goswami, quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Adi Lila, chapter 4, text 52. Lord Krishna desired to taste the limitless nectarian mellows of the love of one of his multitude of loving damsels, Sri Radha. And so he assumed the form of Lord Chaitanya. He has tasted that love while hiding his own dark complexion with her effulgent yellow color. May that Lord Chaitanya confer upon us his grace. There is something going on in the topmost portion of the spiritual world that even Krishna himself wants to experience and understand. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Gitavali points out that the real power in this topmost section of the spiritual world resides in the milkmaids of Vrindavan. The real power in Vrindavan resides in the maidservants of Krishna. How can this ever compare to someone like Nietzsche's horrible speculations? In the topmost portion of the spiritual world, the so-called power is all in simply thinking, what gives Krishna pleasure? That is actually real power, but the power comes from wanting nothing else but how to please Krishna. This is why our bhakti process is all about cleansing the heart of ulterior motives. That means anything that is not strictly for giving Krishna pleasure. In Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, and quoted so often, Rupa Goswami put the verse, Anukalyena Krishnam Shilanam Bhaktir. Devotional service. Anukalyena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhaktir. Devotional service must be favorable. That favorability of devotional service means no other motive than simply to focus on what gives Krishna pleasure. To truly understand what is favorable devotional service, we have to understand this topmost portion of the spiritual world and where is the real power. The more that one simply thinks, what gives Krishna pleasure, the more Krishna wants to come under the control of that devotee. This is why Srimati Radharani is known as Vrindavaneshri. The real power is in simply acting for Krishna's pleasure. We can turn to the last chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita. There you get insight into how Lord Chaitanya concluded his remaining years of manifestation in this world. 12 years. He's surrounded by intimate associates, would lose himself in feelings of separation from Krishna. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains that the Lord Chaitanya is the image of the emotions of Srimati Radharani. If you want to know what is in the heart of Lord Chaitanya, it is that, the emotions of Srimati Radharani. Particularly the emotions of Srimati Radharani when Uddhava visited Vrindavan and found the gopis in such an utter state of separation from Krishna. In Lord Chaitanya's last years in Puri, he would spend his nights surrounded by Ramananda Roy and Srup Damodar, and they would assist in Lord Chaitanya's tasting separation from Krishna. Lord Chaitanya did not want to be considered as Krishna. He had taken the emotions, even he's occupying the position of Srimati Radharani, and he's demonstrating the topmost level of spiritual existence, how to cry out to Krishna in separation. That's why Lord Chaitanya explained to his associates that if you see tears in my eyes while I'm chanting, you should know it's just a show. If I actually loved Krishna, I would have died long ago from separation. In tasting separation from Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, who's taking the position of Srimati Radharani, composed the Shikshastika prayers. Chaitanya Charitamrita describes that his presentation of the Shikshastika prayers begins with jubilation as he describes the benediction of chanting Hare Krishna. Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtan. This jubilation then turns to utter humility. Dadayavamijasa Mahajaninanuraga. I'm so unfortunate. I have no raga. I have no attraction for Krishna's name. And then the humility, Kaviraj Goswami describes, increases, and also lamentation is added. After Lord Chaitanya describes the qualifications of someone who can chant Hare Krishna constantly, he then places himself, he then presents himself as a conditioned soul who's drowning in the ocean of material existence. Then eagerness begins to take over as Lord Chaitanya aspires for the position of being a servant of the son of Maharaj Nanda. Then we near the end of the Shikshastika prayers, where the feelings of separation take over Lord Chaitanya so much that he expresses how he sees the whole world as empty, shunya, zero. He expressed eagerness in longing, eagerness in attaining the stage of pure chanting. And that eagerness for the stage of pure chanting then led to an increase in feelings of separation from Krishna. That separation magnified so much that after Lord Chaitanya said, in separation from Govinda, everything is zero. In the last verse of Shikshastika, he's speaking exactly as Srimati Radharani. Is it her verse? Is it his verse? You could get confused maybe reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, because both are there. That it's her verse and that it's his verse. Obviously, the reason is because Lord Chaitanya is totally 100% in the emotions and position of Srimati Radharani. And he's giving instruction to all the bhaktas how to properly love Krishna. Srimati Radharani is known as the Prem Guru. She even teaches Krishna by her dancing, by her eye movements. Even Krishna alone in the forest without her sees her image everywhere and dances according to his seeing that image. Some of his associates know what he's doing. He's dancing according to the vision he sees everywhere of his beloved Srimati Radharani. And that's one of the ways she manifests as the Prem Guru, the teacher of pure love of Krishna. It is natural then that Lord Chaitanya finishes his Shikshastika prayers by making such an inconceivably extraordinary statement of what is pure love. The reality of this pure love might even frighten us. Lord Chaitanya, in the emotions of Srimati Radharani, says, Krishna, if you want me to die, if that makes you happy, let it be. If you want me to live, that makes you happy, then I'll live. You can't imagine anyone you would say that to. That's why we say there's no real love in the material world. Just think, you would actually, with 100% sincerity, say that to someone? Let me live, let me die, it doesn't matter. I simply want your happiness. How many of you ever said something like that? No. It's frightening, because we are selfish. Happiness is something I want to feel. I want to be the enjoyer. This notion can even extend into attempts for spiritual life. What is a prakriti sahajya? Besides being someone who artificially imitates ecstasies of love of Krishna, more subtly, a prakriti sahajya is someone who wants to enjoy as Krishna enjoys. Basically speaking, it's someone who is concerned with his or her own happiness while outwardly manifesting as a great devotee. The whole purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam is announced right in the beginning, in the first canto. Dharma projita kaita bhoja paramo namatsaranam satam. Bhagavatam completely sweeps out any ulterior motivation, any motivation that is not 100% for Krishna's pleasure. So our bhakti process is meant to distill our consciousness so that we can become qualified lovers of Krishna. By hearing what is the standard of real love, naturally a desire revives in the core of our being for that love. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya is known as the most magnanimous because he's giving the taste of that love to persons who don't even know who is Krishna. Lord Chaitanya is in the role of the Prem Guru, Srimati Radharani. By his years in Puri, feeling acute separation from Krishna, he's showing how to love Krishna. In the last chapter of Anjalila, you find further elucidation of the last verse of Shikshastika. These words may sound so foreign to us because we want things for us. We want a nice time in the material world. We want sense satisfaction in the material world. We want appreciation bordering on a bit of fame would be okay. Overall, we want this world to be a nice place, at least around where we live. So therefore, when we hear the ultimate standard of real love, it sounds so exotic. Let us hear Lord Chaitanya speaking in the position of Srimati Radharani. I do not mind my personal distress. Maybe we can repeat this and then you can see for yourself how this feels a bit exotic. I do not mind my personal distress. Stop right there. I only wish for the happiness of Krishna. For his happiness is the goal of my life. So I think most everyone you could easily say, yes, Krishna's happiness is the goal of my life. Down the line, you know, a few years from now, after I've had my share of material happiness. Right? We're not envious, right? we're willing to let Krishna have his, as long as we get a little bit for ourselves. So yes, his happiness is the goal of our life. 20 years from now, 30 years from now. After we've gotten this and after we've done that. But let's hear the rest of the verse. However, if he feels great happiness in giving me distress, that distress is the best of my happiness. Very exotic, yes? Now you can understand why the mundane academics, historians who wrote about Lord Chaitanya during his time had no they couldn't understand what he was doing. I've explained before that mundane historians of that period when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was manifest describe that he started out great. He was a powerful social reformer against the caste system. And then he went to Puri, and in the last portion of his life, he lost the plot completely. But it is this last portion of Lord Chaitanya's appearance in this world that has so much instruction for us about the pinnacle of bhakti. If he feels great happiness in giving me distress, that distress is the best of my happiness. Let's hear from the purport. This is Anchilila, chapter 20, text 52. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that a devotee does not care about his own happiness and distress. He is simply interested in seeing that Krishna is happy, and for that purpose, he engages in various activities. A pure devotee has no way of sensing happiness except by seeing that Krishna is happy in every respect. If Krishna becomes happy by giving him distress, such a devotee accepts that unhappiness as the greatest of all happiness. Those who are materialistic, however, who are very proud of material wealth and have no spiritual knowledge, like the Prakriti Sahajiyas, regard their own happiness as the aim of life. Some of them aspire to enjoy themselves by sharing the happiness of Krishna. This is the mentality of fruitive workers who want to enjoy sense gratification by making a show of service to Krishna. In summary, Lord Chaitanya spoke this verse to advertise throughout the world what is the standard of pure love in Vrindavan. And in particular, of course, he is advertising the pure love of his dearest devotee. Srimati Radharani goes on to describes there's no limit to the extent or to what she will go through to give Krishna happiness. The sum total of her statements is simply whatever Krishna wants, whatever makes him happy. That's why she is known as Mahabhava Shiromani, the crest jewel of the topmost level of love of Krishna. She says, Krishna is my life and soul. Krishna is the treasure of my life. Indeed, Krishna is the very life of my life. I therefore keep him always in my heart and try to please him by rendering service. That is my constant meditation. So this is how Chaitanya Charitamrita ends. Before Krishna's covers, Goswami begins to review all the leelas of Lord Chaitanya's stay in this world. This topmost Vaishnava Shastra ends by advertising fully the pure love of Srimati Radharani. And we wonder, who is speaking? Is it Srimati Radharani? Is it Lord Chaitanya? And then the truth begins to dawn upon us. Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna Nahe Anya. Radha and Krishna have become one as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The blackish color of Sham has become overpowered by the golden hue of Srimati Radharani, because Krishna has taken upon himself all her emotions. How important is Srimati Radharani to Krishna? You get insight about that during the Rasa Leela. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes in the Gitavali that during the Rasa Leela, a total disaster happened. First, he sets the scene so that you can get an artistic feeling for the atmosphere. And then he describes the utter catastrophe and Krishna's reaction to that catastrophe. He writes, "In the forests of Braj on the banks of the Yamuna, there are beautiful thrones bedecked with flowers. The creepers and fruit trees give satisfaction to the eyes. And upon these trees and creepers, many birds sing sweetly. A breeze from the Malaya Hills blows ever so gently, while swarms of bumblebees fly about in search of honey. The full glowing moon of the spring season then distributes its cooling rays out of love and respect." Okay, now what happens? We've heard such an extraordinary setting, which has nothing to do with the material energy. This setting is the most appropriate time for one thing. It's all meant for Krishna's pleasure. Bhaktivinoda Thakur goes on to say, "At such a time as this, the best of relishers begins his rasa dance. The holder of the flute chooses this is the right time." The situation, the time is very important in Goloka Vrindavan. As you know, time is there, but it has no effect. It's simply like a prop in Krishna's pastimes. There's no aging. That's why on the trees you'll find fruits in all stages of development. You'll find flowers in all stages of development. In some forests, Krishna will find spring. In another forest, he'll find summer. And in another forest, he'll find all the seasons happening at once. How can you compete with Krishna's enjoyment? So now he is beginning his rasa dance. Millions of cowherd maidens dance along with Radha, rejoicing in great bliss. Lord Hari is in the middle, dancing with Radha. She is known as Madhava Mohini, the enchantress of Madhava. By her singing beautiful songs, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, she steals away the minds of all the three worlds. So what else is going to happen now that the minds of all the three worlds have been stolen? All moving and non-moving beings are enchanted by chaste Radha, who has forcefully defeated the pride of Chandravali. Then what? She agitates the mind of youthful Braj Kishor and then suddenly disappears. This is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says is the greatest calamity. The rasa dance completely comes to a halt in the absence of Radha. Millions of gopis are trying to please the mind of Madhava, but they cannot. Everything has come to a halt in the absence of Radha. Shyam Sundar is calling out in the night, come here, Radha. His flute is calling out the name of Radha. The rasa mandal has come to a halt. So now, Shyam Sundar leaves to search out for his beloved Radha. He's crying in the forest, "Please appear, O Radha. Kindly save my life." This is Ishwar Paramakrishna. Searching through the forest in the middle of the night, "Please appear, O Radhe. Kindly save my life." He's crying. Then he finds her and regains his life. At this point, Krishna gives a factual factual statement of what is his situation. He says to Srimati Radharani, without you, there's no rasa dance. And then he says something even more emphatic. Only because of you do I live in Braja. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur concludes this section of Gitavali by saying, at the lotus feet of such a Radhika, this Bhaktivinoda says these things weeping. He says, among your personal associates, please count me also. Making me your maidservant, keep me as your own. He's saying this at the lotus feet of Srimati Radhika. Let us remember that our spiritual life begins when we admit we don't know what real happiness is. Let us allow the bhakti process to do its topmost miracle by cleansing our heart of ulterior motivations. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.